We have with us today on the line from Vancouver, Marlene Trick. She's an organizer for the February 14th Women's Memorial March in Vancouver. And she works as the program coordinator at the Carnegie Community Center in the downtown east side of Vancouver, a center which provides services to many people living on the streets and living close to the streets. In studio with us is Robin Bourgeois, who's an organizer of a solidarity event here in Toronto, also on February the 14th. Robin is a PhD student at the Ontario Institutes for Studies in Education, studying colonialism and violence against Native women. Thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Kristen.
Yeah, thank you.
First, Marlene, can you tell us about the Women's Memorial March? This is the 15th anniversary of this event that's held every February 14th, every Valentine's Day.
That's right.
Can you tell us how it started?
It started in 1991 after yet another murder of a woman in the downtown east side. And this particular case was really brutal. The woman's body parts were left in various places by her murderer. It was, pretty gruesome. She was an Aboriginal woman from the Coast Salish Territory, and her family had come to do a ceremony at each of the sites where her body parts were found. Her murder happened around the end of January 1991, and the women in the community were fed up with, yet another murder of a woman from the community, and they wanted to do something to show the larger community that they weren't going to tolerate violence against women in the community. So that was the catalyst that started the march, was the murder of the woman. And the family had approached the committee about, 4 years ago now, and asked us to not use or speak her name, and to remove her name from anything that we have, any brochures or the banners, and which we had respected their wishes to do that. So that's why I'm not mentioning her name today, out of respect for her family.
Mm-hmm. But of course, you've continued to do the event every year. Can you tell us what's the character of the event? What it feels like for people to be there? What kinds of things happen?
Well, for many people, this is the really only opportunity. Like, there's so much death and grief in the community, in the neighborhood, and that's for many reasons. It's because that people in the community live, I think the estimate was 23 years less than the national average. So many people in that community don't live to be 65. They die prematurely of HIV/AIDS, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, homelessness, poverty, all of those, and including violence. And women in particular, in the downtown east side, even though people are living in poverty, women are much, much poorer than men are in that community. So, why people are just not living as long as other people.
Now, I guess every year is special in its own way, but this year there's your efforts are in the news a lot, in part because the trial of Robert Willie Picton began on January 31st. And he, of course, is the man who's accused of killing over 20 different women on his farm outside Vancouver, and suspected in the murders of many more. There's so much to talk about in relation to this case and the impact on your community and so on. But first, can you just tell us how people that you work with and people that you know in the downtown east side are feeling about this trial finally getting underway? He was charged, I think, in 2002?
That's right. He was charged in 2002. Initially, he was charged with 7 murders, and then it went to 12, and the actual figure that he's charged with are 29 murders, and then there's over 40 women that are still unaccounted for. People in the community are relieved that somebody has been identified as being the perpetrator of the disappearances and murder of these women, but they also know that there's other people involved in this. He couldn't have done this heinous crime himself. It's impossible. People are relieved that he's going to trial, but they still would like to see other people responsible brought to justice.
Marlene, can you tell us how you're expecting the trial to unfold over the next several months? Do you have an idea of the timelines around that?
The regular trial will be starting in September, but they have 750,000 pages of evidence that they need to, you know, now decide what's going to be admissible. So I think it probably will be delayed in September. And it's been a long 4 years already for the families. It's very, very hard on them because they don't have a lot of funding coming from the government by way of trauma counseling. And, you know, what they're going to hear is unimaginable for most of us.
Well, why don't I go on to talk to you, Robin, a little bit. You've taken on studying violence against Native women in your academic career. Can you give us the big picture how a serial killer like Robert Willie Picton fits into the, you know, Canadian colonial picture?
Absolutely. I think the thing that that is most important for me to stress for people is that what's going on in Vancouver isn't anything that's new or unheard of in terms of Aboriginal women across this country. We've got cases all over from sea to sea of Aboriginal women who have gone missing, who've been murdered, and the dealings with it have been problematic on behalf of the response of the state, response of the police, and in terms of the punishments, it's basically these crimes are committed with impunity. So we've got cases in Edmonton. I mean, right now the Edmonton police are investigating missing women from their city, and some of those women are Aboriginal women. There's a serial killer in Saskatoon who was charged in 91-92 with killing Aboriginal women in that city. And that's the same province where you have Pamela George being murdered by two white college students. And then you have 1971 in Manitoba, Helen Betty Osborne, which is perhaps the first big case that really started the recognition that Aboriginal women are subject to violence in this country. There's a huge number of women across this country. I know NWAC estimates that it's 500 women. I should mention it's kind of a disputed number. Nobody is really sure because police refuse to take missing persons reports at times. There's families who do not know what's going on, haven't reported missing women and things like that. But the bottom line is, and this is something I borrow from William Golding, who wrote a book called Another Indian about John Martin Crawford, the serial killer in Saskatoon. And he said, it doesn't matter what the number is. There are a large number of women across this country who are missing, who have been murdered. These are Aboriginal women, and nobody knows where they are or what's happened to them. And what becomes clear is that no matter what the number, it's still a big number. And the bottom line is, it's like something like a plague is attacking Aboriginal women across this country.
I totally agree with that, Robin. If you take a look in any of the Aboriginal Friendship Centres, certainly in Vancouver here, and even in the downtown east side now, you'll still see a lot of posters up for Aboriginal women that are missing. I don't know that anybody, their families included, know where these women have gone to, because they are from the prairies and some are from up north. There's many women from the Highway of Tears that are
exactly
murdered, and that's Highway 16 in northern BC. So there's someone running around up in the north that are killing women along that highway. Many are picked up hitchhiking and never saw to be seen again.
Exactly. I know I grew up in the Okanagan Valley, and so the southern interior, and I know that there's whisperings among Aboriginal women in that area that there's also a serial killer preying on women in our area. So it's rampant, basically.
In 2004, Amnesty International released an important report called Stolen Sisters, which focused on this issue. And it was unusual even for Amnesty to do that report because it was the Canadian office that investigated the situation in Canada, and usually they don't investigate things in their own countries where they're active. How did Amnesty account for the high rates of violence against Aboriginal women in Canada?
If you look at the report, and this is, I should mention, has been backed by the research of women across the country, which is really important. And it was just great that Amnesty kind of put that in a form that reached a broader audience than many of us can reach. There's a few things. We live in a society that has been subject to colonialism since, I mean, we could go back to 1492 if we want to pinpoint it. And Aboriginal women to this day are subject to a colonial mind frame in this country. So the idea is that histories of colonization and the continued colonization of Aboriginal women has contributed to putting them in situations that make them vulnerable to violence. So things like the Indian Act, which has historically taken the rights of Aboriginal women away and have forced them to leave their communities, to have their ties separated, and to be forced into communities and neighborhoods where they have nobody and no security nets, so to say, and they're left vulnerable and on their own, and in cases have turned to things like prostitution, drug addiction, they're homeless, and which has always been used as an excuse to erase that kind of violence. The other thing is the residential school system very much was pinpointed as contributing. The erosion of cultural ties between Aboriginal women and their communities is, I mean, to this day, even though, you know, schools have ended, you know, a couple decades ago, that consequence is still felt to this day. People are still dealing with what that did to their communities, and that puts women in vulnerable positions. There's things related to funding. Much of the funding goes to reserves, but lots of women have left the reserves in order to seek better opportunities for their families, and they're left in a city where the funding isn't being spent on resources for Aboriginal people. Those were the basic, and I mean, we can't ignore racism. There is a racist culture in this country informed by a colonial kind of a mindset that really doesn't really value Aboriginal women, and basically they can disappear and nobody in the state or the police, even the media at times, really cares.
Actually, I think that was the case with the women in the downtown east side, is because many of them were drug addicted, they were sex trade workers, women living in poverty, that there wasn't a lot of attention paid to their disappearances in the 80s when they were really starting to disappear in larger and larger numbers. Mm-hmm. And the community really was not heard. Many advocates in the community had been, you know, reporting to the police that the women were, you know, not coming back to their hotel rooms. And it was pretty much not investigated at, you know, to any degree. They'd just say that, you know, women have gone to, gone back home, or they've moved somewhere else. So it was dismissed, for sure it was.
Absolutely. I know that in terms of my work that I found that the most common thing was, oh, they were drug addicts, or they were prostitutes, or they were homeless, and, you know, we can't track those people. And, I mean, even Philip Owen, when he first got involved and the case was starting to develop, that he offered a reward for $5,000 for every woman who called home, because he was so convinced that these women were transient. And every day, I mean, I have people, when I talk about this, saying, you know, well, these women ran off, and, you know, I have a sister who doesn't, you know, always contact me, and we wouldn't know. But the bottom line is, no matter what, when you do know that something's happened to your loved one, your sister, your mother, your daughter, whatever, wouldn't you want, when you go to the police, to be taken seriously? And that's what's not happening. Those women and their families are being treated like disvalued members of our society.
Robin, I know that you're from the West, but can you give any indication of the situation here in Ontario? And can you also talk about the event coming up on Tuesday in Toronto?
Absolutely. I definitely will admit that I'm not as familiar with Ontario because I've just come here to start my work. But if you check out the website, Missing Aboriginal Women, There's 19 women on that site from Ontario who have either been gone missing and they don't know the whereabouts of these women, or they've been murdered and their killers haven't been caught, which is part of the reason why we organized the event for the 14th. We felt really importantly that we wanted to have a demonstration or a rally that was a show of solidarity with the women who have organized events in Vancouver. I also know there's an event in Edmonton this year. And so we thought it was really important to unite the country and recognize that this isn't just a problem in Vancouver. It isn't an isolated problem in Edmonton, that this is happening all over the country. So we have organized for the 14th here in Toronto. It'll be at 12 noon at police headquarters, which is on 40 College Street, which is near Bay. The event will take place from noon till 1, and we are going to feature speakers and drumming and basically just a demonstration. And it's at police headquarters specifically because we want to call attention to police inaction and racism in this country. We're not there to ask for, say, oh, please help us. You know, we're victims. We need help. We're there to say, you know what? You guys are responsible. You guys play a role in this. This is about racism. This is about inaction. And we are calling you on it. And so that's what is planned for the 14th for us.
And that's in Toronto. Marlene, tell us about the 14th in Vancouver. What are you going to be doing?
We invite the family members of the murdered and missing women to come and speak. So we'll start with Sundance Drummers in the theater of Carnegie Center, and then we'll have family speak at noon. Then we will form a circle at Main and Hastings right at 1 o'clock. We'll start filing out of the theater into the street. We form a circle. All the elders, the march is led by elders, and behind them is the drummers and then everyone else. We expect over 500 people to march this year. Just wanted to say, the theme of our march for the last few years has been called that their spirits live within us. And I see that the march in Edmonton is called Seen Me Lately, and the one in Toronto is No More Silence. And I think it's wonderful that these other communities have organized to march on the 14th of February, and just to raise awareness, I think, around the violence against women all over across the country. And just want to note one other thing, Kristen, that it cost $70 million so far to investigate the murders of the 29 women and the disappearances of the other 40 women on the in the Picton case. And that certainly could have been money better spent had they, like some of those women, obviously wouldn't have ended up at the Picton farm had the investigation happened sooner. And just want to say that they only have 6 detox beds in Vancouver for women. And it's just like treatment facilities and, programs to support women, that money needs to come forward from all levels of government. And they really have to take a look at the serious issue of violence against women all across the country.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten.